Back together, you and I, with a brand new week of shows Monday, September 27th, 2021, right here on Connecticut Today. Author and Professor Lou Grossman, the guest in the 3 o'clock hour about his new book, Choose Your Medicine, Freedom of Therapeutic Choice in America. Why can't we oftentimes take the medications we want to, herbal or otherwise, for our own maladies in consultation with our doctors? Lou and I chatted about that. Carol Platt Leibow joined us from the Yankee Institute for Public Policy. She chatted about Governor Ned Lamont's request for a six-month extension of his COVID-related emergency powers. And also during the show, I had a few thoughts on recent comments from VP Kamala Harris regarding those controversial encounters at the U.S.-Mexico border between some Haitian migrants and Border Patrol agents.
Thank you. Yes, like Mr. Big Voice said, 203-333-9422-333-WICC. Now that I'm back here in the afternoon, I'm sorry. I know this happened a few days ago, but I have to vent on it because this is such an unbelievable example of political hackery, and you don't expect this to come out of the executive branch. At least we shouldn't here in the U.S. And I know you're going to say, well, Trump this and President Trump. Well, I don't care. Stop with the Trump thing on this one. Because these people, remember, we're supposed to be better than Trump. Oh, no. The adults are back. Really? Now, you know, it's been in the news. This Border Patrol agent who was on a horse, I think in the Rio Grande or near Del Rio, Texas or whatever, and he was trying to push back some Haitians who were trying to, for whatever reason, cross illegally into the U.S. Okay, fine. And suddenly, because there was a picture where one of the reins of the horse-mounted border agents, where it looked, if you looked at it closely and you didn't know it was a rein, it looked like, some people said, a whip. Which even the photographer who took it said, no, that wasn't a whip. That's the rein of a horse. Sometimes you fling the reins to keep people away from the horse, spooking the horse, whatever. Maybe they were using it to direct the horse. And of all people, Vice President Kamala Harris, the number two person in charge of the country, the utter garbage that she spewed about this is revolting. She was on ABC's The View a couple of days ago. She said this when they asked her about the picture. Obviously a setup question. Here's a batting practice fastball down the middle, Madam VP. She said, quote, human beings should not be treated that way. And as we all know, it also evoked images of some of the worst moments of our history where that kind of behavior has been used against the indigenous people of our country. Has been used against African Americans during times of slavery. Madam Vice President, what in hell are you talking about? Are you serious? Did you look at the picture? Did she even take the time to look at the picture? And even Joe Biden, her boss, he wasn't much better. He used the word strapping. Joe, wake up. Did you not have enough applesauce today? Joe, what is wrong with strapping? And now everybody's coming out and saying, well, it was the reins of a horse. Sometimes you grab the reins for different things. But my God, from the president and particularly from the vice president of the United States. And by the way, did you see they've hired a couple of more communications people for her office? Because trust me, people in the White House are face-palming. They're like, oh, no. Anything she says, she screws it up. Really? Now, look, you can argue and say, well, the Border Patrol agent shouldn't have been, you know, approaching these migrants on horseback. Okay, you want to go there, fine, we can debate that. But likening that encounter to what happened to the indigenous people of this country and what happened with African Americans during times of slavery? Is she nuts? Is she crazy? They say Joe Biden's a little, you know, maybe it's her. My God, what an absolutely inept, idiotic statement from the Vice President of the United States. First guest of the day is a professor of law and an affiliate professor of history at American University. He's also been a law and public affairs fellow at Princeton University, a visiting professor at the Cornell Law School. He got his Ph.D. in history from Yale, so he knows the streets of New Haven, and he was awarded the George Washington Eggleston Prize for Best Dissertation in the Field of American History. So again, we continue here on Connecticut Today to have guests who have far better resumes than the host does. Professor Lou Grossman is with us. Lou, it's Paul here on WICC. How are you?
Hi, it's a real pleasure to be here. In fact, it's a particular pleasure because I'm a Connecticut boy myself. I grew up in Westport, Connecticut.
Oh, this is great. So you're a Fairfield County guy. How about that?
I am a Fairfield County guy. And if I could just plug one thing.
Sure.
On October 12th, which is a Tuesday, at 7 o'clock p.m., I'm presenting my book that's coming out in the next couple weeks at the Westport Public Library. So I hope that some of your listeners will find their way there to listen to me present my book, which is called Choose Your Medicine, Freedom of Therapeutic Choice in American History.
Yep. Choose Your Voice, Freedom of Therapeutic Choice in America. So, Lou, not just during the time of infectious disease outbreaks or of pandemics, but we always have people who say, listen, I want to try something different. I hear of this therapy, or I ask my doctor about this. But there are times, Lou Grossman, when various agencies, the government say, hey, you can't because there's no approval here. There's no off-label approval. So I guess we get into several areas, Lou, here, of what this connotates, and does this interfere with freedom?
Correct. I mean, that's the main theme of my book. And the book shows, and the book covers, by the way, the entire swath of American history from the Revolution through today. And it shows that throughout American history, a wide group of Americans have believed that people have a right to choose their preferred medical treatments without government interference. Now, there's also, of course, been a lot of government interference in people's choice of medicine. And this is not a polemic. I'm not saying that it is never justifiable for the government to restrict people's choice of medicine. But there is always certainly a broad public pushback to many of these efforts. And I cover all of them in my book.
Professor Louis Grossman is the guest. Lou, hang on. We'll be right back with you. First, traffic and weather together right here on WICC. And he's a native Fairfield County guy. Professor Louis A. Grossman is the guest. The name of the book, Choose Your Medicine, Freedom of Therapeutic Choice in America. And he'll be at the Westport Public Library for a discussion and signing of the book. We'll remind you that day a little bit later on. Lou, before the break, you talked about the fact that, the government does have kind of the ability and maybe the responsibility to draw somewhat of a line into what people can try for their health and what they can't. So I guess a central tenet of what you go into here may be, okay, where is that line? What is that line? Where is it?
Right. And I wish I had a precise answer for you. It is, to me, one of the most fascinating lines to debate in all of law and politics. The one thing that a lot of people don't think about enough when they assert that people should have kind of unfettered access to unapproved drugs is the risk that if we give unfettered access to unapproved drugs to anybody who wants to buy them, then the companies that make those drugs will have no incentive to do the phase one, phase two, phase three clinical trials to establish whether they're effective in the first place. And so to some extent, we need to restrict freedom in order to gain knowledge as to whether drugs work in the first place. So that's one of the paradoxes at the center of of the question of freedom of therapeutic choice in America.
So this is why, Lou, perhaps that some drug companies, even though they might have ulterior thinking, they may say, hey, you know, we don't care how much you indemnify us against suing us. You're going to sign away every right to sue us. That's not the entire part of what's being considered here.
Oh, so you mean why is it that pharmaceutical companies don't readily participate in pre-approval access?
Well, yeah, exactly. You know, things like that.
Drugs.
Yeah, I mean, is liability a part of it?
Well, you know, liability is a little bit of a part of it. And the right to try statute that was passed during the Trump administration, which, by the way, has been used by almost nobody, does have liability protections in it. But that is not the main reason why pharmaceutical companies don't participate. And by the way, they do often participate. And FDA doesn't block it. But they certainly don't participate at the level that a lot of patient advocacy groups mm-hmm. would like them to. And, you know, there's various reasons for that. Amongst them, this stuff is expensive to produce. They don't have vats of it lying around. They want to use what they have in controlled clinical trials to figure out whether it works in the first place. By proving that it works, then they're allowed to advertise and promote it, which they can't do prior to approval. And so there's a whole bundle of reasons, not all of them insidious, why drug companies do try to keep the cap on the bottle, if you will, before approval to some extent.
What aspects, Lou, during the current pandemic, any aspects of what you're talking about in your work and in your book here that you saw maybe in prevalence or just a bit during the current pandemic into this specific series of study here?
Well, one of the, of course, I talk a great deal about not just demands that people get access to the drugs they want to have, but also the overlaps of that desire with resistance to being compelled to take drugs that you don't want to take. And so the obvious thing that has occurred in the pandemic that's very relevant to my entire book is vaccine resistance and resistance to mandates and masks. But it's a lot more than that, because it seems that vaccine resistance is always accompanied throughout American history by a demand for alternative orthodox. And you have seen that here in the pandemic. Ivermectin, which you may have heard of, which is an antiparasitic drug that people are using now. The twist that I've never quite seen before is that are not for completely alternative drugs like homeopathic drugs or herbal drugs. They are for orthodox approved drugs for just not COVID. So hydroxychloroquine is used in autoimmune disease, and ivermectin is used for ringworm, I think certainly parasitic diseases. Mm-hmm. This is an interesting twist that I've never quite seen before.
You broke up a little bit before, Lou, in giving the answer. I want you to repeat again the scenario here. You're talking about basically the theory of off-label use, correct? And this is that the theory that we hear about that you're centering here? In other words, using stuff that's on the market, but not necessarily for what it was designed for.
Exactly. I mean, many Americans don't realize this. Once a drug is approved for one use, doctors are generally free to prescribe it for any use they want. And, you know, there may be issues in terms of insurance coverage and malpractice and liability, but FDA doesn't get in the way of that. And what you're seeing during the pandemic, when we're talking about hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin, are demands for widespread off-label use of already approved drugs, drugs approved for other things. And that's kind of a different kind of freedom, because FDA isn't telling doctors they can't prescribe the drug for COVID. Rather, they are just sort of like talking down the drug in the eyes of protesters and kind of trying to suppress in the eyes of protesters, knowledge about how this drug would actually be useful. I'm not embracing these positions. I'm just summarizing what protesters say.
You know, Lou, I get a lot of calls on this show, and I've tried to find some evidence of it on the net. But, you know, people wonder, well, Paul, was there the same amount of pushback during the times of, say, polio or tuberculosis on those inoculations akin to what we're having today? Talk to us about that, Lou. Was there around, you know, tuberculosis and also polio?
So I won't say there was no protest, but to me, one of the most clear illustrations of how America has changed in the last half century is to compare the American response to the polio vaccine to the American response to the COVID vaccine. Americans willingly rolled up their children's sleeves to take the polio vaccine even before approval in clinical trials. And certainly after approval, the inventor of the polio vaccine was regularly cited amongst Americans as being one of the most popular people in the country. And compare that to the reaction to Anthony Fauci today, for example. It was a very, very different world, a world where people trusted establishment institutions. They trusted science. They trusted government to extraordinary degrees. And now that trust is evaporated, and therefore we have a very different reaction now than we had to the polio vaccine.
Well, that's because, Lou, there was no social media or cable news channels back then. That's what I'm guessing.
Well, I mean, I think you put your finger on something very important, which is that back then what you had was Walter Cronkite talking to 60 million Americans a night or something like that.
Yeah.
You didn't have the fractured media environment you have now. But I will say this, which is some people think America is going off the rails now. It's not. It's actually, well, let me put it this way. It's been on the rails for only a relatively brief period of its history. This middle of the 20th century Pax Americana era where people trusted the government and trusted science and trusted medicine. This is pretty much a reversion to how Americans have approached medical controversies for most of American history. And maybe this is partly because media was partisan for most of American history. During the Jacksonian era, the Jeffersonian era, there were party newspapers and people just got they just consumed information that reinforced their pre-existing beliefs.
Yeah.
So this is not new in America either.
The name of the book is Choose Your Medicine, Freedom of Therapeutic Choice in America. Louis Grossman is the author. And Lou, before we wrap up, again, give us the date of that Westport Public Library appearance.
So it proves that you can go home again. I will be appearing at the Westport Public Library at 7 o'clock p.m. On Tuesday, October 12th, and tickets are available online, and I hope I see many of your listeners there.
All right. Professor Louis Grossman. Lou, yeah, you can come home again. Good luck in Westport, and we'll talk down the road. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, likewise, Paul. Thank you.
Thanks. Professor Louis A. Grossman, Westport native. He's been at several Ivy League universities, specializing in history, medicine, and the law. Choose Your Medicine, Freedom of Therapeutic Choice in America. A lot of folks, as you just heard from Andrew Krause in the newsroom there, watching what's going on at the state capitol, the House debating the whole thing today, the Senate does it tomorrow. I think it's a foregone conclusion, like I said earlier, but it's an issue that needs to be talked about. And the Yankee Institute for Public Policy, the dominant conservative think tank in the state, has released a statement on the governor asking for an extension of his emergency COVID powers till mid-February. And Carol Platt-Leibau, the head of the Yankee Institute, joins us once again for a return visit. Hey, Carol, it's Paul. How are you today?
Oh, Paul, always great to be with you and your listeners.
Well, thank you, Carol. I read your statement, but why don't you elaborate on it a little bit here? The Institute, not a surprise, does not think this is the way to go. Why do you say that?
Well, you know, our state senators and representatives, I personally believe that if they can come to Hartford to complete a legislative session, if they can come to Hartford for fundraisers, certainly they're able to come to Hartford to address developments in the pandemic response. And surely the governor is aware that they have been in Hartford and have been perfectly able even to fulfill their duties via Zoom. So it's really not clear, I think, to anyone with any common sense why the governor would need emergency powers. We're almost 2 years into the pandemic, certainly a year and a half in, and it's pretty clear to everyone there's no emergency.
Carol, what do you say to the folks and to the pronouncements occasionally coming out of the governor's office that say, hey, no, we do need this to streamline the process and to make sure that certain federal assistance still comes to the state? What do you think about that?
Well, you know, it would be much more efficient, if that's what we're talking about, to dispense with a legislative branch altogether, wouldn't it? Wouldn't it be the most efficient if we just installed an authoritarian, totalitarian government? I think we've heard people like Thomas Friedman in the New York Times talk for years about how China is much more efficient than the United States. And it's always more efficient, right? I mean, it's incredibly efficient not even to have to ask these pesky voters what they think, right? But, you know, the fact is efficiency is not the only good that people care about, and especially not in a system that is purportedly a representative democracy, Paul. What's more, there are certainly alternatives that are capable of balancing the goods of efficiency with other goods, including being able to have the voice of the people that is, of course, most directly accounted for through the legislature being represented. And certainly there are ways that lawmakers could change their own rules to address these developments in the state's pandemic response. We could shorten the notice for special remote legislative sessions from 72 hours to 24 hours if, you know, we were concerned about timeliness. Or if the governor is concerned about efficiencies, you know, things like that in being able to get quicker responses, you could have a standing committee of lawmakers that meets regularly with the governor's staff so that we could more quickly develop legislation as needed. So, you know, there are a lot of different ways that whatever concerns the governor has could be addressed short of effectively abolishing one of the branches of government in our state.
Carol, hang on. I have another angle here I want to entertain you with when we come back. Carol Platt-Leibau is the guest. She heads the Yankee Institute for Public Policy, talking about whether or not Governor Ned Lamont should have his emergency powers again extended, not for a short time. This one would be through mid-February of next year, 2022. Traffic and weather together, 4:36 on a Monday. It's Connecticut Today on WICC. Yes, thank you, Greenwich. Thank you, Fairfield, Westport, Wilton, Norwalk, Darien, New Canaan, Bridgeport, Stratford, Milford, all right here on WICC 600. Back to open phones momentarily. Carol Platt-Leibau for a few more minutes, head of the Yankee Institute of Connecticut. Not happy, as most conservatives and right-leaning organizations are here in the state with the governor's quest for an extension of his emergency powers. Carol, isn't a lot of this, maybe not the whole thing, Carol, but what do you think? How much politics is this about? I mean, Carol, you know and I know that the Democratic members of the Senate and the House, this makes it easy for them. You know, they can go full Pontius Pilate here, wash their hands. Hey, we don't have to get blowback from the unions, the local and statewide unions. And let's face it, Carol, the governor's approval ratings during COVID are in the 60, 62, 63% range. I wonder how much of this is pure politics.
Well, you know, who knows? Of course, it's always easy if you can say you weren't involved. But Yankee Institute, of course, is a nonpartisan organization, 501c3, and we don't play politics. We just believe that if you're elected to help represent people, that's what you ought to be doing. You need to be representing the views of your constituents. And when Governor Lamont's powers would expire the next time, we would be fully 2 years into COVID. And it's clear to everyone, we're no longer in an emergency situation. There is no need for the governor to be single-handedly governing the state. The legislature has been back to handle every other policy situation. They have been making laws. They have been passing laws. They have been meeting. They have been legislating. And so why is this any different? People deserve to be represented. There is a wide range of opinion on a variety of issues having to do with COVID policy, and people deserve to be represented by the people that are elected to represent their views.
And yet, Carol, when some people, whether you or I agree with them, disagree with them or not, when some people get together and say protest a mask or a vaccine mandate, you know, they're immediately branded as right-wing nuts by a lot of the media in this state, and sometimes there are legislators participating there. Well, to that I say, then why not let the legislature have a hand in this and get rid of the ruling here, or the governing, as you say, by executive fiat?
Right. Well, and as you pointed out, Paul, it is perhaps politically easier for people simply to be able to wash their hands of what are contentious and difficult issues. And I would point out that those who simply wish to point to a certain political demographic as those who hold certain views, you know, that's really kind of ignorance, because if anyone does the kind of research that I would hope the press would be doing, they would see that in fact, people who are not vaccinated do not tend to fall neatly within any certain partisan demographic, or in fact, ethnic or racial demographics. And it's unfortunate when people who are supposed to be informing us, much less the politicians who are supposed to be uniting and leading us, attempt to turn us against one another by seeking to foment division.
Yeah, and I mean, even some of the mainstream outlets in this state and nationally, Carol, you know, the message, as you say, they put across is that, well, the typical unvaccinated person is a flag-waving Republican, an overweight, white, suburban guy. And as you say, if you do a little more of a deep dive in here, you know, it's not true. I mean, I had a professor on from Quinnipiac a week ago or so, and he said, or rather she said, it was a dean of one of the schools there, the medical school, and she said, well, no, there's a lot of young people of all races who aren't vaccinated. Also, Carol, at least now we're seeing some of the major outlets carrying stories of, you know, unvaccinated large pockets of minority residents in some of the biggest blue cities in the country.
Well, I would, in fact, refer those in the press who are not apparently doing their homework to the leaders of Black Lives Matter in New York City, who are pointing out the disparate impact that Mayor de Blasio's vaccine passport is having on African-American residents of the city who are being effectively blocked from full participation in civic life there. And the threats Black Lives Matter has made due to apparently what they're saying is the disparate impact that vaccine mandate and vaccine passport rule is having on African-American citizens of New York City.
Carol Platt Leibow from the Yankee Institute for Public Policy. Carol, thank you. We appreciate the time, and be good, and we'll hook up down the road. Thank you, ma'am. Appreciate it.
I will. And, Paul, I would just encourage you and your listeners always to check out our work at yankeeinstitute.org and on Twitter at Yankee Institute and on Facebook.
All right, Carol. Thank you. Carol Platt Leibow. Thanks, Carol. Bye-bye. YankeeInstitute.org. I should have mentioned that. Carol did. Thank you. YankeeInstitute.org.